Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and today on the program I'm speaking with Michael Pollack, an experienced criminal defence litigator who focuses his practice on matters in federal and New York state courts, as well as regulatory investigations and hearings. In addition to trial experience, Mr. Pollack has written and argued numerous criminal appeals to the United States Supreme Court. Michael Pollack is one of a new movement of activists who are focused on reform, not revolution. A press release has just been distributed in the United States by two non-profit groups, Reasonable Solutions, OWS Philadelphia, and the 99% Declaration Working Group, announcing a National General Assembly to convene in Philadelphia the week of July 4th, 2012. To tell us more about the movement and the call for a National General Assembly, Michael Pollack joins us now. Welcome to If You Love This Planet, Michael.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you for having me.
So you've got a lot of experience as a lawyer testifying before the Supreme Court. That really takes my breath away.
Well, I have argued petitions to the Supreme Court. I want to correct that. I have not argued in front of the Supreme Court. But that's a technicality, I guess. A petition is an application to the Supreme Court to be heard for certiorari. So I don't want to misrepresent anything.
No,
but I have spent many years being an appellate lawyer, though.
What's an appellate lawyer? I don't know what that means.
An appellate lawyer is after trial, after a criminal case is over, you then, if mistakes are made during the trial, you then bring that to a higher court. In the United States, that's the United States Court of Appeals, or the United States Supreme Court is the next court, but you have to petition to get into the Supreme Court. But I also do trial work. I'm also a criminal defense litigator. That's all I do is criminal defense. And that's how I got into this whole Occupy Wall Street movement.
How? What happened?
Well, I live in New York, and I got a call from a liberal arts college from the administration saying, we've had 20 of our students arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge. This
yeah.
is, I guess, October 1st. And the New York City police had arrested 700 people who were walking on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
Well, it turned out that the students and a lot of other people were following the police onto the bridge.
Yeah.
Then they turned around and said, "Oh, we arrest you." So
I remember reading that.
700 Yeah, 700 people. But those cases, most of them have now been dismissed and resolved. So that's over. But that's how I got involved. I went over to the college, talked to the students, who I've since met with several times. And I did a PowerPoint presentation, which was interesting, that I put together. And it was like a presentation on, well, how not to get arrested if you want to protest. Because this was right in the middle of most of the protesting was going on.
Mm.
And they wanted to know how to avoid getting arrested again in the future, you know, where to stand, what kind of signs you could carry and not carry, and what the limits were for marching and such. So we did that. And then afterwards, the students, we sat down and we started talking about, well, what is this Occupy Wall Street movement about? And what are the grievances? And they started to tell me, and I started writing them down. So we wrote them down, and I said, well, how can I turn this into a legally enforceable document? And I did some research, and the United States Constitution has something in it called a petition for redress of grievances, which the colonists came up with for King George. They wanted to petition the king for representation in Parliament, because as you probably know, the beginning of the American Revolution was really trying to reconcile with the king.
Mm.
And to just get rights in Parliament. They wanted to have representatives in Parliament so that they could be heard. And, of course, King George would have none of it, and he threw the petitions in the garbage, and the rest is history. But what we're doing is basically the same thing. What we're doing is we're using that clause from the Constitution to elect another Continental Congress, petition Congress. We're going to elect 876 delegates from each of the 435 congressional voting districts in the United States. Mm. One man, one woman from each district, and they're going to come to Philadelphia the week of July 4th, and they're going to ratify a petition for redress of grievances, and then it's going to be legally served on the government. You know, 535 copies to Congress, 9 to the Supreme Court, and 1 to the White House. We then will wait a reasonable period of time for them to redress the grievances. And if they don't, then the next step would be a grassroots campaign in the United States to support candidates using our contacts with Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Declaration, which is nationwide, to support candidates who take a pledge to redress these grievances that are produced in Philadelphia this summer. So it's not, we do not advocate violence whatsoever, none. We are advocating a revolution, but an electoral revolution, where we give the current elected politicians a chance to redress the grievances of the 99% or suffer the consequences, which are, in this case, a grassroots movement across the country to replace all 535 members of Congress with people who are willing to take the money out of politics, overturn Citizens United, electoral reform across the country to allow third-party candidates, ending the prison industrial complex in the United States, on and on and on. Right now we have 21 suggested grievances for the petition, but only the delegates will draft the petition. The document we have now, called the 99% Declaration, which you can see at 99declaration.org, will show you all the 21 points currently in the document. And we have 8,000 members who vote on the addition or removal of any point in the document right now. We use online polling. So anyway, I've talked too much. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so did this list of grievances that I now have in front of me, which is, how many are there, you said, are there a 29?
No, 21.
21. Did that come from your meeting with those college students, or has that list of grievances been drawn up from people around the country in the Occupy movement?
Around the world.
Oh, around the world.
Yeah, we started with 5 people active in Zuccotti Park.
Yeah.
And we're part of the New York City General Assembly. And then we have now grown to 8,000 members from all over the world who are online with us in our group online. And any point that's in the 99% Declaration is voted upon by the 8,000 people in an online poll. So to answer your question, no, we started with, I think, 20 original points, but they have been changed drastically. Things have been removed, put back in. I mean, we think that the final petition for redress of grievances, which is the final document, should be about 10 points, 10 critical points.
Yeah.
These are too many, and they're very diverse.
Yeah.
But these again, are just suggestions. The final petition for redress of grievances, voted on, ratified, and signed by the delegates, will be of their complete creation. They will be elected at the end of March, beginning of April, over a 3-day weekend, a long process of voting. Online, we've hired a company called VoteNet Solutions, which is the I know in Australia they have online voting, I believe, because we looked at one of the companies in Australia to do this for us. But we hired an American company to do it. They're the leading company of online voting, and they do voting for corporations, unions, large voting.
So what role will they play in the Occupy movement?
With the voting company?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the way it works is, if you want to be a delegate to the National General Assembly, you go to our webpage and you sign up to be a delegate. from
What's
whatever
the web
district.
Page? What's the web page?
It's the99declaration.org. It's the numbers 99declaration.org.
Okay.
You go there, sign up as a delegate, and there's a map of the United States, and you go to your congressional district and you sign up. And then you create a little like campaign profile with your picture on it and why people should vote for you in your district. And like I said, there's going to be one man and one woman from each district. And if you want to vote in the election, it's the same process. You go to the webpage, register to vote, and then we give that information to VoteNet. And then VoteNet will contact all of the voters by email and give them a PIN number. And the PIN number then on voting day, you will get a ballot from VoteNet to cast your vote.
How can you possibly vote for people you've never met? You know, they may look right, really terrific on the internet, but you know, they may be a little bit off center. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Difficult to work with. You know what it's like working in organizations. You have some nutty people and some really good people, but you don't know about the nutty ones till you start working with them. So I don't quite understand how that's going to operate.
I'm well aware. We have 8,000 people in our group.
Yeah, right.
All with very, very strong opinions.
Very strong opinions, yes.
Right. And the way it works is, but to get elected, you're going to have to go knock on doors. And you're going to have to go talk to people and get them to vote for you. A, to register to vote in your district, and B, to vote for you.
But not everyone in the district is going to vote. You've got to knock on
Correct.
The doors of the people that belong to the 99% movement, right? So you're going
No, it's open to everybody. It's much broader. It's open to vote in this election, this national election. You have to be over 18, a U.S. citizen, or a lawful permanent resident, which means you're not a U.S. citizen,
right.
But you're not an illegal alien, let's say, or undocumented. So that's all you need. And then you can vote, and you have to be a resident of the district, obviously.
But then how do people who are running for office, so to speak, know which doors to knock on in their district? Oh, I suppose that would be...
They can knock on everyone's door.
You can't do that.
Well, of course not. But we're going to help. I mean, our job, the board of our organization, which is a not-for-profit organization that's running this, our job is to secure the venue, which we've done. We signed the contract.
Yeah.
Secure the voting company, which we've done. We signed the contract and given them the down payment. Get the permits necessary. We've done that.
Yeah.
And get the insurance, which we've done. And also, we run advertisements. I don't know if I sent you copies of our ads, our television ads.
I'd like to see them. Yeah.
No, I'll send those along to you. Mm. You can also go on YouTube and just type in 99 Declaration, and you can see our ads on YouTube. We've run a 45-second spot and a one-minute spot nationally on television. So that's generated a lot of membership. And then, of course, as we get closer to the election, we're going to target voting districts in local radio and television spots, which are much less expensive than doing national spots. To just let people know, hey, there's an election coming up in late March, early April. We'd like you to please vote in it. It's to elect delegates to another constitutional convention.
But only those who have registered to vote can vote, or can anyone in a district vote?
Anyone can vote.
Anyone.
But you have to do it online. You have to register to vote for secure, because we have to. Otherwise, if we don't register the voters, then there'll be voter fraud.
I know. So what I'm saying is, will you provide a list of the registered voters in that district to people who are running for office in that district so they know which doors to knock on?
Mm-hmm.
Will you?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, I understand that now.
No, we will let people know in their district who are kind of like the voting list. But
it's a massive operation, isn't it, Michael?
It is ambitious. It is ambitious, and we've been working on this since, I guess I say, beginning of October, but things have gotten so bad in the United States that we feel we have to do something.
I know.
Occupy Wall Street, where we started in Ducati Park, is fantastic. We love Occupy Wall Street, but it's not the model they used of direct democracy in local general assemblies is not going to work on a national level.
No.
And the problem in our country is really at the national level, where we have corporations who, and other concentrated sources of wealth, basically running the country.
We've Koch brothers and Karl Rove and these awful wicked people.
Well, it's not. We don't limit it to just corporations, actually. We limit it to all concentrations of wealth, including unions.
Yeah.
We feel that any concentrated wealth should not be permitted to make any further campaign contributions, which, of course, flies in the face of the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United, which we categorically reject.
Why don't you describe to the audience, Michael Pollack, what is Citizens United? What was the decision? Who are Citizens United? What actually happened? What does it mean? So people really are on the same page.
Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission is a Supreme Court case that was decided in 2010. And what that court case holds is that two things. One, corporations are not just people for the purpose of executing legal documents. They're not just a legal fiction of a person, because obviously a corporation is really not a human being, but now they are considered a human being. Therefore, because they are considered a human being, they have a constitutional First Amendment right to speech. Therefore, they are permitted to spend any sum of money, unlimited funds, in any way they see fit on television, including political campaigns. Now, in the United States, we have limitations in how much you can directly give to a candidate for office, but there is no limit on how much you can spend on television on behalf of that candidate in advertising. And they form these so-called PACs and political action committees and super PACs, super political action committees, which have unlimited funding of a candidate. So if someone wants to support Barack Obama or support Mitt Romney, what have you, you can run advertisements for him to encourage people to vote for these people. Unlimited amount. And of course, corporations have the most concentrated wealth in the country. So what we've called for to combat Citizens United is a constitutional amendment, which has already been proposed to overturn Citizens United. Because in our country, if the Supreme Court makes a decision, it's the final word, unless you have a constitutional amendment
passed
to overturn
by the and the Congress has to pass the constitutional amendment.
Well, there are two ways to do it. The Congress can do it, or the people can have a constitutional convention to change the Constitution, but that is very hard to do.
Yeah.
You need 34 states to approve it, and then you need 38 states to ratify what's called an Article 5 constitutional amendment. It's extremely difficult to do, and it's also dangerous, because if you have a constitutional convention, you're opening up the Constitution, and who knows what they would change in it.
Yeah.
I think we feel the better practice is to just change, you know, either have a 28th Amendment saying that corporations are not people and that corporations cannot give unlimited monies to political campaigns, or amend the First Amendment. But, you know, our group is calling for a 100% campaign financer system, which can be achieved without amending the Constitution. That is, if you receive enough petition signatures to get on the ballot, say for Congress, you get $5 million to run your campaign from the federal government, from the taxpayers. If you get enough to be the senator candidate, you get $10 million. If you get enough to be on the presidential ballot, you get $100 million, whatever it is. And that would be determined by a nonpartisan commission like the Federal Election Commission. And anyone else who donates, gives money to a politician, will go to prison for bribery.
I love that.
So that's what we're proposing. Anyway, that's the proposal. The delegates can vote on it or not. But yeah, as part of the petition, we're suggesting a new law should be passed so that if you give anything of value, including a promise of a job to the candidate or his family members, any gift, any golfing vacation holiday, anything, you go to prison from 2 to 10 years.
And as they should. You know, in Australia, we have voting, compulsory voting. If we don't vote, we get fined $50. And so every person in Australia votes. And
I think that's a great idea.
I would humbly suggest or not so humbly, that you include that in your list of grievances, because without compulsory voting, you don't really have a democracy. Because, you know, I think only about 25% of the eligible voting public voted for Ronald Reagan. So it's just mm-hmm. really a farce. And the other thing, what was I going to say that we have in Australia? Oh, yes, I ran for Parliament and I nearly won in 1991 as an independent. I missed by 600 votes out of 70,000, actually. And almost all my expenses were paid by the federal government. So what you're suggesting, we already have in Australia.
Every sane democracy, except us, limits the period of election. In the United States, we have a presidential election cycle that lasts 18 months. No, yeah, 18 months. So in Britain, for example, I believe it is limited to 3 months.
Oh, we have three weeks.
3 weeks.
Three weeks.
As it should be.
But because
the corporate media makes a fortune on these advertisements that are paid for by PACs and super PACs and by the candidates who have virtually unlimited amounts of money, it is in their interest to extend the election season and make it as salacious and scandalous as possible to keep people watching, that it has become a reality television show.
Yeah.
That is an 18-month reality television show starring people like Herman Cain.
Yeah.
And it's a joke. And we're the laughing stock of the world.
You are. You absolutely are. And the other thing about the television stations is that when they get people watching these crazy, crazy debates with the candidates just lying through their teeth, then they sell lots more hemorrhoid cream and stuff to make your false teeth stick to the top of your mouth and various drugs. And, you know, that's how they get more money from their advertising clients. The whole thing is sickening, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's more than sickening. It's a threat to our democracy.
Well, you don't have a democracy, let's be frank. I mean, let's really be frank. You have no democracy. You have an autocracy run by the very rich.
If you look at our first point in our petition, and it's not a petition, the 99% declaration, it says, ending the corporate state.
Yeah.
We are what Mussolini would call a corporatist state.
Yeah.
Where the state has merged with the economic system of capitalism. And when the state merges with corporations, you have a corporatist state or a corporate state. Some would say it's a fascist state. I wouldn't go that far, but I would say that...
It's verging on that, though.
Well, the problem is that we have, in a country of 300 million people, we have 150 million people living in poverty, which means $23,000 or less for a family of four. Not one person, a family of four.
So that's half the population.
Or they're living in a low income family, which is a little bit more. But basically, it's living in poverty.
That's half the population lives in poverty. 150 million.
Not legally poverty.
The legal definition. All right.
50 million. 50 million live in the legal definition of poverty, which is $24,000 or less for a family of four.
Yeah.
The rest, up to 150 million, say 100 million, live in what's called low-income families, which is not much more. So then you have another 150. That you have a struggling middle class who's barely getting by, and then of course you have the top 10%, which are doing fine, who basically control all the policy in the country,
which is in their interest, the filthy rich,
the very, very, very wealthy people and corporations, which, because of our political system and the necessity to get elected every 2 years, and that you have to pay for your own election, forces our politicians to basically give the corporations and their lobbyists the power to write all of our laws.
Yeah.
So if you're someone like the Koch brothers and you have good lobbyists, you write the environmental laws. If you're Pfizer, you write the regulations to pass new drugs. If you are a food company, you decide what goes in the food. You decide what the cheapest possible ingredients are in the food that would pass the FDA. That's our problem. I don't know what's in our food. I don't know what's in our air. I don't know what's in our ground, because the regulations are written by the companies that profit from the least amount of regulation. That's the problem, a large part of the problem. So we are controlled, our country, our policies are controlled, not for the benefit of the people, but for the benefit of maximizing profits for corporations. Okay, we're in trouble. We are in serious trouble. And the people are realizing it. Occupy Wall Street has caused, and the 99% movement, which are kind of separate movements, they derive from different sources that have merged somewhat, have awakened the country. I didn't even know what it was. I never heard of the 99% movement or Occupy Wall Street until these kids got arrested. But now I'm completely involved, fortunately or unfortunately. So the people are awakening, and they're not going to get away with it much longer. Unfortunately, the way we see it, one of two things are going to happen. Either we can reform our political system and get the money out of politics, or there's going to be a revolution in the United States, or more accurately, a civil war.
Do you really think so?
Yes, no, I'm convinced of it. Just driving around where I live in upstate New York, and I see all the closed businesses, and I see all the signs for foreclosures, and I see people out of work and who have given up looking for work. The statistic of 9%, you know, unemployment, or 8.6% unemployment, and then we have 16% underemployed who can't find full-time work, doesn't take into consideration the millions of people who've given up looking for work. I don't know how many people are really sitting at home with nothing to do and being angrier and angrier because they can't feed their kids. This is a serious problem, and people better wake up, because these people are not going to sit around losing their homes, having no place to work, having not enough food to eat. Hunger in the United States, despite our obesity epidemic, is a huge problem. Our pantries can't keep up with the demand. Our food pantries for the very poor and out of work can't keep up with the demand. Social services can't keep up with the demand. And we have new laws now that were passed, I guess, in the 90s that limit the amount of public assistance to 5 years. That public assistance is going to start running out for people.
That's disgusting. So Absolutely disgusting.
We are in a massive crisis. Well, it will be corrected either by what we're doing, which is demanding electoral reform and massive change. And what is causing all this unemployment? It's caused by corporate control of the government, which allows for absolute outsourcing of jobs, corporations that do not have to pay income tax in the United States because they set up their corporations offshore. And we have I just saw an article on a project in California, the largest public works project in American history, $7 billion to rebuild a bridge, I believe. They outsourced it to China.
They didn't.
This is an American, they did. It's an American public works project for an American bridge in California, but to make the most amount of money, the corporations that got the bid are outsourcing it to Chinese workers and Chinese construction materials.
That's under Jerry Brown. I wouldn't have thought that Jerry Brown would allow that to happen.
It's a bidding process. It goes to the low bid.
But that's disgusting. It's obscene.
Well, I imagine that if you want to be, I don't know the details of it, but I'm guessing that the politicians who approved it are doing it for reasons known to them.
Like,
you know,
what?
I think,
like what?
I mean, it's not hard to guess what company is giving them what contributions for their next campaign. It's probably companies that are involved with the bidding process. It's not, the system is not working. It is corrupted by money. And this is just the latest example. Professor Reich is the former labor secretary for President Clinton, has come out and said we should bring back the public works projects of the 1930s,
yeah.
The Tennessee Valley Authority, the Civilian Conservation Corps, and put people back to work fixing roads, bridges. This can be done. And it can't be done, though, if you're going to hire Chinese workers and use Chinese materials to build it.
I want you to tell me, Michael Pollack, what you think of capitalism in this present day and age. A sort of overall philosophical view in light of what's happening in America, which is the ultimate capitalist country. What do you think of it?
Well,
analyze
capitalism,
it.
capitalism works, actually. I think, I think capitalism does work if it's applied as Adam Smith described it in his book Wealth of Nations in 1776.
How did Adam Smith describe capitalism?
He described the capitalism should have a free hand, an invisible free hand, where the market forces should work to, which will be incentivized by improving yourself. In other words, you'll work hard. If you have an opportunity to make money, to feed your family and work hard and be entrepreneurial and start a business, and it's a level fair playing field, you'll do it. That's not what we have. What we have is a shackled hand of capitalism, a manipulated market controlled by an elite group of oligarchs, corporatists who control the economy through the political process by paying the politicians in the political process to pass legislation that benefits them. In other words, they're cheating. It's not a level playing field. It's not real capitalism. It's some people call it crony capitalism. It's just corruption. It's just what's called pay-to-play politics. These corporations see it as a business expense. You give $5 million to the politicians on the Environmental Affairs Committee if you're mining coal, and then you get a return on investment of billions of dollars because they passed lax regulations on coal development. That's how it works. That's not capitalism. That's a controlled economy.
Well, let me put in my oar here, Michael Pollack. Capitalism means that the most active people who want to make lots of money and who are driven by whatever, neurosis or selfishness or greed or wanting to make themselves very rich, prevail. And some of them are sociopaths. You know, they have no moral conscience. About 1 in 25 are sociopaths in society, and you can actually see them. You know, they lie with impunity and the like. So they rise to the top like cream, and they make lots of money in a capitalist system by freedom of what they can do and exploiting other people, exploiting the workers, being against unions. You know, the reason that you have to tip in restaurants in America is that the workers get paid practically nothing, and the only way they survive is through tips, whereas in Australia we have a decent basic wage and free healthcare and the like. We don't tip unless we really feel like it. And so what happens is that these people get richer and richer by exploitation, which is all totally fine in a capitalist system. And then, for instance, you have start off with 20 auto companies, and then one buys out another, and they eat each other up, they gobble each other up. So then you end up
that's corruption.
Well, let me go on. Then you end up with three auto companies, and one goes bust. And so then the government then funds the one that's gone bust because it's got so many employees. And so that's socialism being used for the capitalist system. Or when the banks nearly crashed, the government supported the banks because they were too big to fail. That's socialism supporting the banks. Or you've got the military-industrial complex, which spends $1 trillion of the American people's taxpayers, hard-earned taxpayers, on building weapons to kill people. And that's socialism for killing. I mean, it is. It's real socialism. Whereas the poor little people at the bottom that you just described, they're nowhere. And so it's socialism for the rich, let's be frank, and it may be corrupt, but that's the end result of unfettered capitalism. And it's capitalism for the poor, where they have to look after themselves, they can't feed themselves, they can't afford medical care. I mean, looking at it from a generic analytical perspective, it's kind of inevitable that it would end up in this situation. Now, other countries emulate America and its capitalist system. In Australia, we've always had a kind of happy mix of socialism, free medical care, free tertiary education, the whole thing, with capitalist, underpinnings as well. And and it seems to me that America's totally out of whack, just totally out of whack. And in fact, you know, it could blow up the world tonight if it wanted to with all its nuclear weapons. And that's the other thing I'm giving a little soliloquy here, Michael. I want to get to your grievances that you have enunciated. Nowhere in you address global warming, which is imperative because the Earth is actually dying from global warming faster than any of us would like to contemplate. But you don't address the risk, ever-present risk of nuclear war with thousands of weapons in Russia and America targeted on each other. And of the 23,000 bombs in the world, Russia and America own 97%. So we could have a nuclear war tonight. And, you know, if you want more information on that, I can provide it. And you do not address nuclear power. I spoke twice at Wall Street on two separate, I think, Saturday or Sunday nights, at Zuccotti Park. And the first one I addressed was the risk of nuclear war and the total annihilation of all life on Earth, and that must be taken into account. Must be, number one.
Can I respond?
No, you can't respond to that. No, you won't. And the next one is I did a meltdown at Indian Point and described how Manhattan millions would die of acute radiation illness, leukemia, cancer, and later on genetic deformities. One man screamed at me, "You're making me depressed." And I said, "I'm a doctor and you need to know the facts." And we tell it.
Hey, I live 30 miles from Indian Point.
There you go. Now, though the nuclear
Probably
reactors,
less is the curve that,
well, you know, you either should move or close the bloody thing down. And so you've got to include that. All 104 reactors in America must be closed down, lest there be a Fukushima at Indian Point, number one. Number two, rapid abolition of nuclear weapons must occur between Russia and America, for there's no reason to have them. And those two issues, I see, must be included in your list of grievances.
They are, actually.
It's a dense
document, but yeah. It's not explicitly stated the way. With respect to nuclear power, there is a call for, in a couple of the points, education and putting people to work, I believe, to end the reliance on, and also in the EPA point, in the environmental point,
right,
to end the reliance on fossil fuels and to transition to green energy.
Yeah, but you don't mention nuclear power, and I looked specifically
I would not include
for
nuclear
that.
I would not include nuclear power as green energy.
No, that doesn't matter. You've got to be specific and state it.
So I would say yes. We also, we don't explicitly say removal of weapons, but we do say withdrawal of all troops, including the troops in Australia.
That's good. That's good. But you've got to talk about abolition of nuclear weapons too.
Well, no, and I agree with that. The problem with that, with what you're proposing, and I will do this for you, as any of our 8,000 members can make a proposal to change the document, but they have to vote on it. So we can certainly make those proposals to change our document, but it would have to be voted on.
All right.
And then we have to leave the polls open for a week. But I will put those in for you and ask them if they would.
As
a matter of fact, if you would like to send a proposal of the wording, I will use that wording.
I shall do. Yep.
All right.
I'll do it today.
And I should also mention that the 21 points that we propose are purely suggestions for the delegates to consider. We don't take a position on what should be in or should not be in.
Okay.
And the people in our group cannot run for delegate. We have to remain neutral.
Okay.
Our job is just to facilitate.
Okay.
I take your points, and I agree with you on capitalism. We need a mix of, it's an evolution, and I think the Europeans and Australia and other Western democracies have moved ahead of us.
Other civilized countries.
As you wish, have proven that a mix of capitalism and socialism can be effective and fair.
It's humane.
No, I agree with you. And believe me, you don't have to, you're preaching to the choir here in terms of having a safety net and Medicare for all in the United States, which is a single-payer health care system.
Yep.
Absolutely. We need a safety net in our country, and people who can't take care of themselves need to be taken care of. We have to take care of each other.
Yes.
That's the way a civilized society operates.
Yes.
It's not survival of the fittest, unless you want to become animals.
Well, that's what capitalism really is. It's survival of the fittest.
Well, pure absolute capitalism.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have that. We don't have pure absolute capitalism. We have a controlled economy by corrupt people who have corrupted our political system.
Yeah, that kind of for me is capitalism, or the end result of capitalism, you know, the final
Well, I disagree with that, because what we have is a merger. Democracy, representational democracy, is a political system.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism is an economic system.
Yes.
And what we have is a merger now of capitalism with the political system, which is a disaster.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And so we have to address that first.
Okay.
We have to remove the money in politics and the capitalist influence in politics before we can do anything else. I mean, but we do call for all of these social programs, and we do call for a reduction of military spending to pay for all of these social programs.
Not reduction. You've got to abolish military spending. You've got to stop killing and taking over Libya, where all the oil is, and, you know, wanting to go into Iran and take the oil, and you've gone into Iraq.
No, absolutely.
I
agree with you. If you read our declaration, we point that out, that most of the we're a democracy.
Yeah.
But we've been in a constant state of war, or what we call perpetual war,
yes.
Or actually George Orwell called perpetual war.
Yeah.
For that reason, to make money, to keep the population distracted, in fear, and and to exercise our hegemony over other societies because the corporations need to make money. The latest is Iran. There's already saber rattling with Iran, because who benefits? The oil companies benefit just from the saber rattling, because the price of oil goes up, and if there's another war, of course, the military-industrial complex and all of the corporations that support the military-industrial complex, like Halliburton, like KBR, all of
like
these...
Like Lockheed Martin, like Raytheon, Boeing, like Grumman.
Right. Those are the direct beneficiaries. Their stocks all go up.
Yeah.
So that's all it's about. There's no reason to be in war with Iran. I mean, there's no purpose to it other than to take advantage of, a profit-making opportunity.
Yeah.
And oil. No, I mean, there's a legitimate concern about the flow of oil, but Iran benefits by this saber rattling because the price of oil goes up for them, and the military-industrial complex and our oil companies benefit by this saber rattling and instability in the Middle East. The instability in the Middle East is the greatest profit-making enterprise ever created by anybody. The media benefits because they can run terrifying ads about the end of the world. Organized religion benefits because, the rapture's coming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Middle East is a profit-making bonanza for everyone you can imagine in our society, corporation. It's a sickening thing to me, but that's what goes on.
The Cold War, wasn't it, Russia?
Well, they were the boogeyman then.
Yeah, you've got to have a boogeyman. Yes, you've got to have a boogeyman.
Of course. I mean, George Orwell is probably one of my favorite writers. And if you read 1984 and change oligarchy, socialism, INSOC, to corporate oligarchy, and you reread the book, it's today, not 1984, 2012. It's just substitute oligarchy for corporations. Terrifying.
It would be interesting to actually, for someone to do that, to rewrite the book using current terminology and see how it turned out. I mean, you probably wouldn't be allowed to because it's copyrighted, but
I don't know.
It would be a fascinating exercise, and you could do it with tongue in cheek. So it could be sort of a bit of a It could be funny.
That'd be great.
It would be, think about it, Michael.
Oh, I got my hands full trying to organize a nonviolent revolution in the United States. So I'm a little busy at the moment.
Well, aren't you having a big sort of rally in Philadelphia? Let me see.
Yes.
I wrote it down.
Well, when?
On July the 4th.
Well, yeah, as you know, that's when our Declaration of Independence was written for all of you, Commonwealth people.
for non-Yanks, we're non-Yanks,
right? So that's that, and Then after the National General Assembly completes its work between July 2nd and July 4th,
right.
We've already attained the permits. We will walk from our venue to Independence Hall, where the Constitution in 1787, if I'm wrong, people are going to kill me, but September 1787, the Constitution was ratified there.
Right.
And also the Declaration of Independence was written there and signed. Well, not all of it was signed there, but that's where it was adopted, in front of that hall. So we have a permit for 2 hours in front of Independence Hall, and we're going to have speakers and an announcement of the final petition and what's in the final petition. And all of 876 delegates will be there, and we hope a lot of other people, and we're going to have speakers. We've invited some prominent speakers to come, and it's going to be a celebration of our liberty and our freedom of speech.
I'm getting goosebumps as you speak.
And we hope the end of the corporate state. And then what happens after that is the final petition for redress of grievances will be served like a lawsuit, basically, like a legal document on the Supreme Court, Congress, and the president.
Right.
And the pledge, we will ask all of the people running in the 2012 election to pledge support of the 10 points in the final petition, whatever how many points it is. And if they want our support in the 2012 election, they will have to pledge that within their first 100 days, they're going to adopt these demands, like removing all money from politics and replacing it with a 100% campaign finance system, which they could do with one law.
Yeah.
If they chose to.
Yeah.
And the way it would work is there would be a blind trust set up where the taxpayers would, from the Treasury Department, would put money into this trust for X amount of dollars, kind of like the Social Security Trust, although that's been borrowed against. It's another issue. But and then, as I said, money would be given. If you can get on the ballot, you get, just like in your election, you get federal funds to run your election.
Mm.
And the Federal Communications Commission, the media hates this one, will be mandated to give equal access time to each candidate. So if you're running in California's 21st District for Congress and there are two other people running, you each get an hour or whatever, 3 hours, whatever the FCC decides, to have either a commercial run or for free, or you have to be on a debate for a certain amount of time, all to be determined by the FCC and FEC, the Federal Elections Commission. If you don't, your license will be pulled because you are privileged and licensed by the American public,
yes,
a privilege to make money on our airways.
Yes.
And if you don't want to participate in our society by offering, you know, some kind of duty to the public,
yes,
for that right to run those airways, then you should lose your license and someone else should get it.
Yeah.
And it's just like corporations in the United States outsourcing. You want to access our markets and you want to make money in the United States, you will pay income tax in the United States, you will hire American workers, maybe take a little less profit rather than hire, you know, children in Indonesia, and there's nothing wrong with hiring people in Indonesia, but these jobs are being sent overseas, and basically people are being abused over there also and being underpaid. These corporations, to access our markets and make money in the United States, would be required to have some moral, civic commitment to the United States, or they should be excluded from the market and let another company in the United States willing to do that and make the same product do it. I mean, one of my favorite companies is Apple Computer. I love my Mac. I love my iPad. They're an American company. They make a great deal of money here, but they make all their products in another country
in
and
China.
Don't get the jobs to American citizens. I mean, nothing wrong with having other, and I understand we have a global economy, but we have millions and millions and millions of people out of work, and there's no responsibility by these corporations, even though they come here to benefit and we buy their products.
Yeah.
These companies should either be boycotted or they should be required to use American labor. There are ways to do that. There are tax incentives that can, and Obama's announced this. He's already announced this idea. We had this in our plan months ago, but he announced it. There are going to be tax incentives to companies that hire American workers and don't outsource jobs.
Well,
and there hopefully will be tax penalties to companies that do outsource, so that any profit margin that they can make by hiring people outside of the United States will be neutralized by taxes. Because we need to keep, to get our economy working again, we need to employ our workers so they can spend money on products.
Well, now,
pontificating.
No, it's really good. So the only way to get politicians to behave responsibly is to pressure them so that they are scared that they will not be reelected. Now, so you're going to serve these petitions on sitting members and on the Supreme Court and the president.
And those running for office.
Those running for office. How are you going to... Well, I suppose you could threaten them by the fact that you've got... That the majority of people, like 68% of Americans, actually support your movement and your concepts and your desires. Mm-hmm. So
That's right.
If you could mobilize that 68% of people to go along with you to support what you're doing, then it might make them frightened. But if they feel, well, to hell with you, you know, it all sounds good, but we don't need to bother because we can get elected and still get our money from the corporations, we won't take any notice of you. So how are you going to really, really threaten their re-election and make them scared, Michael?
You're right. And the current paradigm is, if you run for office, there is a 94% chance, no matter who you are or what you say, a 94% chance that you will win that election, Congress, Senate, what have you, if you spend more money than your opponent.
Yes.
That's the statistic.
Yep.
Now, that's tough to overcome because they don't care what the American public says, because obviously that's why their approval rating is at 5 to 9%, depending who's doing the polling. They don't care what we think anymore because they have the corporate money and that statistic to rely on.
Yep.
We have to change the equation so that money is no longer the way that people get voted. And we're going to do everything within our power to mobilize the popular vote. And people are angry enough now. I think people are finally at the point, as I said before, something is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
We're either going to see a turn towards violence. And this is, you know, if you're involved in Occupy Wall Street, you know that there are people involved, unfortunately, in my view, who believe in anarchy and violence to achieve ends. But for most part, the people involved are want to achieve ends peacefully, and there are many, many different viewpoints. I mean, we feel that we have to try to reform the system and change the system as quickly as possible before things get so bad in the United States, and so many jobs are sent out of the country that there's going to be a rash change, and then we don't know what the result is going to be.
A civil war, really, yeah.
Well, history has taught us that when there is a revolution, quote-unquote, in a country where it's not an outside power, like with Britain in the United States in the 1770s, if you look at France or Russia, it results in bloody civil war and then a dictatorship for a period of
time.
And
also, everyone can have a gun in America. That's a really
scary
thing.
Well, that's true, and it would be even more violent here.
Oh.
It would be very violent here. But we're trying to avoid that. We oppose all forms of violence.
Let me draw this scenario. So pragmatically speaking, I don't think you're going to have an awful lot of influence on the upcoming elections in 2012. But you are then going to work on the 2014 elections, and you're going to run people who represent your movement in every single congressional district, are you not?
Correct.
And the other thing you could put in your pledge or your grievances is to make voting compulsory. That would freak everyone out. Why don't you do that too?
Americans don't like that.
Well, that's too bad. They're so damn lazy. And why? I don't think anyone has the right to live in America and call itself a democracy if they don't vote. They should go and live in Yemen. You know, they've got no right to live in America if they don't vote. I'm really serious. I mean, how dare they not vote? How dare they?
A lot of Americans don't even like the compulsory insurance rule, even though it benefits them. people don't like being having the government tell them what to do.
Well, that's too damn bad, and you know they have to stop at stoplights. They're not allowed to kill people. They have to wear their seatbelts. You know, there are laws to protect people. And this is a law that really protects everyone. And I think you have to override that and say, now, look, people. It's like, look, children.
Well, how do they get them to vote? How do they know that they're voting or not?
We get fined $50. Well, we're automatically registered.
But you guys also have online voting, right? You can go on the internet.
Well, yeah, but that's very secondary. We get registered when
it makes it easier to vote.
They all have our addresses, so we're automatically registered. Oh, but people turn up. It's a day of kind of celebration. Everyone turns out to the local church or the local hall, and they all vote. That's just what we do. And
We're in favor of definitely having like a 3-day voting period on the weekend
rather than a Tuesday
where people have to work.
But, and also you have it very difficult laws for in which are different in every congressional district for people to register to vote. And, you know, poor black women with, you know, 5 kids can't get to the voting thing and they can't register. And people who've been in jail can't vote. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why can't they vote when they're out of jail?
We do address all those things. And We do advocate removing all tests for voting. We do advocate a national voter registration card free because people who live in urban areas don't have driver's licenses because they don't need them.
No.
But and if they're you have trying to go to the poll.
They're trying to stop students voting now, those awful Republican governors.
Well, yeah, they're trying, but so far the courts have upheld that students who go to college can still vote and have a choice of which district they can vote in, I think, last I checked. But,
well, Michael, I've been raving on, and I kind of apologize for raving, but I guess as I've lived in America for 20 years, I feel more American than...
Well, I wish you were American, because then you could run as a delegate.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you.
At one point, I could have run for Tip O'Neill's seat and maybe won because of, you know, the freeze movement, but I wasn't an American, and at that stage, Australia didn't allow Australians to have dual citizenship, but now we do.
Are you married?
No.
Are you married? I'll marry. You can come and be an American.
Oh, that's a nice offer. Oh, my God. Are you good looking?
A proposal.
Are you good looking, Michael? Would I like you?
No, I'm hideous. No.
Oh.
I'm not commenting on that one. You'll have to look me up online.
But you're not married. Well,
Match.com.
I have to seriously think about that. Well, anyway, on that really very exciting, optimistic and hilarious note, we're ending this because we've run out of time. So thank you so much, Michael, for this really, really interesting conversation. I'm sure everyone will be totally turned on by it. 99declaration.org. I'm going there as soon as I get home.
All right, and tell me if you like my picture.
I will. If I like it, I might accept your offer. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye. I had a great time.
Bye. My guest today on If You Love This Planet was criminal defense litigator Michael Pollack. He is now working for the 99 Occupy movement, and I'm sure you'll find it absolutely fascinating. Well, that's it for today, and don't forget, if you want to help this program progress and get on lots of stations, you can contribute by going to our website at ifyoulovethisplanet.org, and there's a place for contributions. Thanks so much for listening again this week, and we'll be with you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.